Blog Talk Radio.
Think and discuss and hear and resonate about things Masonic. This is the acquired taste of Masonic effects. It's hopefully informative and hopefully entertaining and always expanding, never really fully grasping the entire scope of Masonry as members will realize, and people that are curious about the principles and ethics of Masonry will sit back and enjoy. I think it's a pleasurable experience. This is the voice and the place, the purpose of universality. And that is a measure often tested over time. It is as the... as the theme and the nature of the jazz always playing in the background is audacious, so is Masonry. The organization has lasted hundreds and hundreds of years which makes us wonder at first glance, what in the world is going on? Why? No power grab or seditious nature would last this long, not with such a public profile, certainly, with a comfort level, yeah. It's comfortable, and it's purposeful. We would wonder, what purpose does it serve in people's lives, that striving to improve? As odd as it seems in the storms of social media, we witness that experience that people show us in their language and their topics, how they write about each other and what they say. There's an untapped level of anger just simmering. What are people so angry about? And if you need a target, if it gives you some relief and purpose in life to have a target to blame the shortcomings of the travails of the world, then certainly, if you need targets, blame Masonry. We are broad-shouldered. We are here to do good by our communities and our families. And we... are the one of those purveyors of a multicultural mixture. Not always perhaps the clear intent. Yes, we struggle, we experience the struggle of people coming forward with a stronger sense of nationalism than is purposeful or reasonable. The zealots don't tend to do well in Masonry. It takes a contemplative, a calmer mind and temperament to feel that balance that the order provides. Freemasonry is the opportunity. What you do with that opportunity is strictly up to the individual. But it has many precincts and many facets, and all of them, any one of them, can be a source of great satisfaction. And who's to say now, when we talk about things, we make reference to true Masons. I do tend to think we need to be able to understand the language of Masonry. If not the content, and so we'll add to that bit by bit as we go along. We're going to be talking more about the knowledge that comes to us. Part of what's been on my mind, and something that I'd like the listeners to help us with, in balance, are we meant to progress? Are we meant to progress? Have we always adjusted, or have we been impervious to the changes going on in the culture around us? Well, I would think there's enough evidence out there to show that we have been flexible, because at the core of Masonry, whether one particular member or another exhibits these traits, being open-minded is an essential aspect. That's like, I don't know if we have Masons, the people that are have perfect pitch. I don't know. I think it probably is a relative kind of a position. Little shout out. We're just to put some perspective on it. And because we are grateful, we want to start off that showing some of that and sharing some of that with all of you. To our listeners from the Philippines and from the UK, and yes, China and Austria and Russia, and not to forget Brazil and Uganda and France and India, Canada, South Korea, Cameroon. Good day. And thank you for supporting us. We presume from your support, your attendance, and your return that we are serving some purpose. So get on with a little. You fill up your beverage with whatever libation is suitable for the occasion that you find yourself in. Take a deep breath. Focus a bit. Give this next hour over to yourself. Be in the moment with us. And simply by asking yourself, are you worried about what's coming? What you have to prepare and your responsibilities? Well, then that's projecting you somewhere else. Are you clinging and being troubled by history? What's happening? Yes, what's happened yesterday and the day before? Where did you learn to filter out the being in the moment? Perhaps it was just one of those points of relativity that was never shown to you, and you haven't necessarily discovered it for yourself. The past, the present, and the future, they're all together. We live in the moment. You can't do anything else. But one thing that's kind of interesting is that when we look at how we know ourselves, how you know yourself and I know myself, it is a collection of ideas. It's not necessarily ourselves, the self. It's a collection of ideas and experiences that in some way we extrapolate into defining statements that tell us who we are as human beings. The self is something different than that. Here, a little for your enjoyment. From 1961, this is John Coltrane. My Favorite Things. Beautiful, beautiful piece. Work, doesn't it? It has longevity. Don't be too quick to suggest that we are globally in decline. Don't be too quick at that. Take a look at the bigger picture. The tide ebbs and flows, doesn't it? So if we're seeing a small snapshot and it's ruin and decay, it's plastics in the ocean, it's the sense of indifference to our environment and to one another. More than ever, I think it reinforces the notion that in your heart, no matter what kind of oppression or difficulties we are facing as human beings, we know certain things about our existence we know that things will get better and that we are serving a purposeful part in that big play. And that we don't always understand the role that we perform. We know that. And at the core of it, for reasons that cynics may find hard to believe, we're optimistic. We're optimistic. We have faith. We have faith in whatever form and shape you measure that. And faith is not licensed to be ruthless to other people. More than ever, I think Masonry does have a clearer voice right now. It's like the ring of a bell that carries on the breeze. It's being challenged, as we expected. Despots are out there lurking. Greed unbounded has always been part of the existence of humanity. But we have technology now that helps us reveal the stories. Those dirty little secrets are coming forward. It's not that we are more or less than we ever were, but we're seeing more. And it's unpleasant. It's unpleasant. Well, the unvarnished truth rarely is pleasant. It's there for us to puzzle and reason through and to help us. Because once we see evidence of a problem, once we acknowledge that evidence, then we can do something about it. It's how it starts. No pretense. You'll hear, I'm sitting here feeling a bit melancholy today, actually. Celebrities come and celebrities go, but there was a voice throughout my entire young adulthood until now, that it became known to me because of where I lived and the things that I did, was Aretha Franklin. For a time, I was working in Detroit, and the music resonated. And she's passed on. A woman that seemed to me to be authentic. She was the real reality of a good person. And she brought a lot of joy to a lot of people. So later on in the program, we'll acknowledge that. Today, though, we're not exactly a witless bunch. Here, this will help you. I believe this came from one of our kind, Oscar Fingal O'Flaherty, Wills Wild. Yeah, I think that God, he said, in creating man, somewhat overestimated his ability. Yeah, it's hard to ignore that. If we could only outlaw stupid, could you imagine? You know, just the group, just us. They are leaning in. Like, if we could do that, wouldn't that be quite amazing? Well, in a way, we can combat it ourselves. We can fight the good fight ourselves. We don't have to let stupid, no matter how many people are saying it in the room. We may covet our idea. It may be quite contrary, but we know better. We know better. We know how to treat one another, and we know what respect is, and we know what dignity is. And as Masons, we know how to carry on when nobody's watching. It's not like when nobody's watching is an opportunity to do something contrary. No, when nobody's watching is when it's us. No illusion, no other purpose. We do the right thing. That's what honest people do. Some cause happiness wherever they go, others whenever they go. Oh my, that's just too painful for words. Oscar Wilde, he was born in October on the 16th in 1854, and he was an Irish poet and playwright. He pushed the boundaries, didn't he? We don't want to admit that we like anything about him. We didn't. back at a time when, you know, we have some strange notions about homosexuality, strange notions through history and in different cultures. Although we're here understanding more and embracing this whole idea of alternate lifestyles, perhaps, or more, but it's all very natural. It depends how you look at it. Other places, just like us, other places, people are being persecuted and hung. They do the same for about people with membership as a Freemason. Yeah, even today, it's hard to believe. Hard to believe. But this fellow proved himself. He was outstanding. He was a bright, bright guy. And when he was really young, he became fluent in French and German. Very, you know, a little bit of an upstart, eh? Very, very bright. After university, he moved to London. It was fashionable, and it was large, and there was an energy and pace, and there was a society, and turned to sort of refinements, good food, good company, good literature, music, good wine. He refined his ideas about the supremacy of art. Imagine that, the supremacy of art. How ridiculous could anybody be to think that art could be supreme, have that kind of role and influence in a person's life and in the mind? And turn to these ideas and dialogues and essays that he wrote, and themes that he wrote into them about decadence and duplicity, and also beauty. He was the person that wrote The Picture of Dorian Gray. Do you remember? Never Aged. He wrote Salome. He was in Paris. He wrote it in French. And it was refused a license for England because there was an absolute prohibition on the portrayal of biblical subjects on the English stage. There's a stiffness about that that we can't change, but we can contain it. Yeah. And some of that was veneer. We know that stiffness. We know that. He pushed, and he pushed, and he pushed. And he flaunted the laws. And he paid for it. He was set for a trial for libel. And that's where they unearthed evidence that caused Wilde to drop his charges against the Marquess of Queensberry. And it led to his own arrest and trial for gross indecency with men. And after two more trials, it wasn't simple. Two more trials, he was convicted and sentenced to 2 years hard labor. He was sentenced to the maximum penalty. And he kept writing while he was in prison. But it also ruined his health. A wit. Found it easy to sit back in hindsight and say, you know, you should have known better. You don't push the boundaries. Look what we have going on when good people don't stand up for what is right, then we have complicity. Complicity. He says, what is a cynic? A man who knows the price of everything and the value of nothing. Some of these, his quotes, his famous quotes, are breathtaking. There are only two tragedies in life. One is not getting what one wants, and the other is getting it. So I've selected a sonnet just to share with you, give you an idea. This is a fellow that's just sort of gobsmacked. He's just approaching Italy. He fell in love with Italy, the arts, the culture, the energy, the atmosphere, the scenery. he fell in love. This is a fellow from the cities, from London. And excuse me, but London was noisy and polluted. And so Italy would give a sense of freshness. He says, and this is a simple sonnet on approaching Italy. Poem wording. I reached the Alps. The soul within me burned. And just think of this. He's describing these emotions that most of us would not put words to. Italia, my Italia, thy name. And when from out the mountain's heart I came and saw the land for which my life had yearned, I laughed as one who some great prize had earned. And musing on the marvel of thy fame, I watched the day till marked with wounds of flame, the turquoise sky is burnished gold turned. The pine trees waved as waves of woman's hair, and the orchards, every twining spray was breaking into flakes of blossom foam. And when I knew that far away at Rome, in evil bonds, a second Peter lay, I wept to see the land so very fair. Turin. So we're walking along together, and one of us breaks into this description of what they're seeing. It's like being able to observe your own thoughts and then describe them with an artist's brush. Here. Sometimes artists do bring things to our world. Let's see if you care for a little bit of Charles Mingus. Goodbye, pork pie hat. Check this out.
Thank you.
For some, the world is austere. They feel great purpose in that. For others, it's sensation and experience. And music has already been part of that experience. That excitement that the Pythagoreans felt about the mathematics of music. Hope you're enjoying the program so far. Here, I want to share the commentary with you today. This is Masonic symbols indicate a civilization within chaos. Yeah, I think it's kind of evident if we want to be frank about it. We use symbols not just as sources of information, but as intermediaries between reality and the unknown. Masonic symbols are definitive, representing powerful forces, fears, countervailing against the shocking reality of man's inhumanity to man. Symbols reporting an understanding of the depths of human experience. What shields us from time? Time works a mystery on us. Partly is the mystery of introduction. Here is a story of a temple that fell and rebuilt. The story is about the mind palace that is inside the architecture of the human brain. We come from nothing. We live, we are no more. After acknowledging the struggle, the purpose of all creatures to exist, we become the destroyer. From this, we preserve an unenforceable ethical standard of living. Our minds within masonry are exposed to bliss behind closed doors. Those doors require insight. Some are the simple philosophy of a child that we lose as we mature and bear responsibility and see the failures. Do we pretend that they do not exist and turn our gaze away? Do we succumb and withdraw? Do we accept? Do we deny? How does an ethical being deal with the meanness and sadness of an exploited, uninspired, illiterate life? Overwhelming or otherwise kept in proportion by centuries of thought on issues of freedom and democracy, equality and universality. Our symbols, like us, are anecdotes for symbols of pain and fear. Thoughtful, contemplative, but unassuming men have moved through life on a wave of curiosity and the boldness of scientific objective inquiry. It should be men and women. We identify less with false confidence, jingoism, paranoia, and more with observable fact. Masons communicated those lofty ideas on the nature of humanity through a universal shorthand language. Having them is only part of the story. Distinguishing ourselves means answers to questions we've asked. And the secrets remain locked in the confines of a loving heart. Everybody has a right to their opinion, but we don't have a right to our own facts. Little Art Blakey of it, Jazz Messengers. This is called Moaning.
Thank you.
Of the sonic effects is really quite simple in a way. If we want to inspire excellence in members, in Masons, then it's important, I believe, to expose them to the finest aspects of ritual. What you do with that, please don't blame Masonry. You know in your heart how you've applied yourself and whether you have. And if you've been diligent, you know what you can accomplish. If you haven't, please be gentle with the craft. Not designed to put barriers in your way. If anything, its design and intent is to encourage and inspire. That's not to order you around and tell you what to do. It's not to put salve on every one of your disappointments. We have no idea what baggage and emotional mindset you bring to the craft. We don't want to. But we do challenge. We are challenged with one of the most difficult, energy-draining tasks. Not as fools will talk about with tasking people. If you're not tasked, you're not obliged, you're not connected, you just want to walk around with some kind of mechanical separation, that's ridiculous. No, this is where there is engagement. We're challenged to do nothing, to understand when we're confused that the best option is to do nothing. Oh, it's so much more typical to run around doing anything, no matter how thoughtless it might be, just because we have this childish notion that doing something is better than doing nothing. It satisfies us emotionally, temporarily, until the walls close in on us. Tasked with silence. What do you observe? Yes, and when you do that, it's remarkably difficult. But when we see each other on the other side, we're no longer afraid of certain things. We're no longer afraid. If you're wondering why we would do it, we overcome that sense of apprehension. We can't achieve that step, that learning, unless we master some of the challenges. Masonry helps promote what those challenges are about and gives us a history. So it's not just opinion. There's some fact to it. Do we accept the geometry and the mathematics of the Greeks, the Pythagoreans? Do we? Yes, that's a yes or no. It's not like you can have opinions about them, but the facts, what they were working with, what we were working with, the Mandelbrot fractal geometry, do we accept these facts? Yes or no. That defines you. Mystery makes some of that self-evident, doesn't it? It doesn't mean that we all are there. It certainly doesn't. But it means this is the framework of learning. This is the mindset that we work inside. This is opportunity. This is opportunity. And here we go again with this. More learning. Hope it's in small bits and pieces. You should be running wild in the forest, and or sitting down beside a stream with a bottle of wine and a good book, or a brush and some paints, and or just sitting there quiet and watching. If you sit quietly, even the smallest creatures will come up to you. And the smallest creatures, the insects, and the squirrels, and the deer. But can we master it? And it is, in all fairness, it is daunting. It's a difficult, difficult task, and it takes repeated efforts. And don't be discouraged. Certainly don't be discouraged. With the bleakness that you see around, you can influence. You can bring a goodness, that smile, that care, that compassion, no matter. That's not the world around. That's something that comes from inside of us. We give in kind. Here's something in kind. Not a dish to be served every single time you get together. No, that would be so tedious. Oh, this is helping to develop that acquired taste. Look, I like I like seafood from the Maritimes, but would I eat oysters and mussels and lobster every day? No. Or every time you and I see each other? No, I hope not. Oh, Lord. But once in a while, we can sit down and enjoy it. And once in a while is what makes it sparkle. It's unique. It's special. So what do you pour with this? Is it summer and you have a jug of sangria for us? Okay, but every single day? There are times when I like a glass of whiskey and I like to sit down and read. And I imagine some of you are like that. But all the time, no. It's a departure from the days when my early ancestors, the Grahams, would always have whiskey at the table. It was a different time. Could we live that kind of life today? Well, don't be ridiculous. That was then. We live in the present moment. When we have challenges around us that rely on ethics, not zealots. Oh, please, don't be banging a drum and declaring, screaming from the house rooftops that this is the way and everybody should be following. No. You know better. If you believe in something, you show that in a mature fashion. And remember, not everybody around understands. So if you don't pay attention to that, you're just coming across pompous. You're talking to hear yourself talk. We've all met those folks. Ugh. Oh, this is the orator that has a sensitivity, that understands, or makes an attempt to. May not be perfect. It's like the schoolboy that's acting very brave, and then you see the older man rebuffing him. Why would the older man feel challenged by a schoolboy acting brave? That's important for that young boy. But you see some thick-headed indifference being played out. See that a lot. Masons, we don't see that. We know better. Watch. And one of the characteristics of us is our gentility, our manners. Our manners are simply answers to dealing with otherwise stressful situations. What do you do when you see one of us? We greet them. We have a protocol. It's wonderful. And we have some type of bond. Not that every personality just falls into this cookie cutter shape. Oh, no. Some people remain goofy and ridiculous, and some remain angry and grumpy. But we have these protocols that allow us some degree of sincerity. And beyond that is what we call authenticity, the real Mason. Hmm? Here, you want to hear real masonry. This is something that sort of captures the imagination when I'm around a lodge. And I don't want us to have the cable tow too long. You know, the lodge experience is important. I don't think it's we serve it well when we're clueless. And I think we need to have very, very good mentors assigned to our ended apprentices. And I think we don't always put our minds to the preparation for mentorship. And it shows. It shows. We can't inspire and draw the talent, the best, the finest, the excellence from an ended apprentice with substandard coaching, with feeble, illiterate mentoring. And it is not the same. There's not one type of mentor for every single person, but there are mentors that are inspiring. All we see of wannabes, people that do have some, a bit pompous in their style, but it's because they've forgotten that good mentoring is about feedback and self-correction. And so that means being receptive and listening, paying attention, what works, what doesn't work. Put yourself in the shoes of the entered apprentice. Oh, I sat through a very painful experience not too long ago in a lodge where a fellow got up and was giving an oration. That's all I could call it. And it was it was tedious. And the people were just glazed. Their eyes were just glazed. It was like one of those moments where everybody could just fall asleep in a second. He was magic. And yet the response around from some was to pat him on the back. Dishonest. It was dishonest. It's not that you're going to say, well, you know, that was boring as hell. That's rude. That's impertinent. No, it's that how do we take that person making the effort and with some degree of sincerity and help him to improve his delivery? Well, first we have to have an agreement that we can sit down, that he's asking the question and he wants some feedback. And the nature of that discussion is going to be open and gently honest, that the intention is not to harm or hurt feelings. Then it could be purposeful, but the wheel just keeps spinning. Here, I want to talk to you about that square pavement, that ubiquitous pavement that just sort of, it's always there. And when you're new to a lodge, you look at it and think, Next time you walk in, here, keep this in the back of your mind, maybe. It is not merely the Jewish high priest of centuries ago that is here referred to, but the individual member of the craft. This is our friend William Leslie Wilmshurst again, who I love to engage. It's intended for every Mason is intended to be the high priest of his own personal temple and to make it a place where he and the deity may meet. By the mere fact of being in this dualistic world, every living being, whether a Mason or not, walks upon the square pavement of mingled good and evil in every action of his life, so that the floor cloth is the symbol of an elementary philosophical truth common in all of us. But for us, the words walk upon imply much more than that. They mean that he who aspires to be master of his fate and captain of his soul must walk upon these opposites in the sense of transcending and dominating them, of trampling upon his lower sensual nature and keeping it beneath his feet in subjection and control. He must become able to rise above the motley of good and evil, to be superior and indifferent to the ups and downs of fortune, the attractions and fears governing ordinary men and swaying their thoughts and actions this way or that. His object is the development of his innate spiritual potencies, and it is impossible that these should develop so long as he is overruled by his material tendencies. Money, money, money. As long as he's overruled, he's just not going to achieve it. And the fluctuating emotions of pleasure and pain that they give birth to. It is by rising superior to these and attaining serenity and mental equilibrium under any circumstances in which, for the moment, he may be placed, that a Mason truly walks on the checkered groundwork of existence and the conflicting tendencies of his more material nature. Our thoughtful brethren of the 18th century speculated not only on individual objects in their lodges, but on the whole structure of Masonry. When they said the rule of three, I understand the key of the lodge is at my command, they meant that they had a full understanding of all 3 degrees and could understand the construction of a right angle. In an interesting lecture form, which seems to have been practiced mainly in Lancashire toward the end of that century, there's a closing section to the third part, that of the third degree, which illustrates this thinking. You say you have wrought as a head architect, both as master and undertaker. Could you undertake to build a lodge? Yes, I could and would undertake if the materials were found and properly prepared. What materials are requisite to build a lodge? Truth, justice, and charity, with which this lodge and every other lodge is or ought to be well stored with. If you have the materials, how would you lay off your foundations to square them? I would take the proportions of 3, 4, and 5, which answers to the great Eureka of Masonry, commonly called the 47th proposition of Euclid's Elements of Geometry. What does it demonstrate? It demonstrates that the square of the hypotenuse of a right-angled triangle is equal to the sum of the squares of the other 2 sides. How do you prove it? The square of 5 is equal to the sum of the squares of 3 and 4, and the square of 3 is 9, and the square of 4 is 16, so that 16 plus 9 is equal to 25, the square of 5, by which proportions Masons take off right angled squares and perpendiculars. What is understood by the square of 3? By the square of 3 is understood the 3 points of my entry: preparation, admission, and obligation. How do you apply the square of 4 to the 4 cardinal virtues, which 2 squares are equal to the square of 5, which are the 5 points of fellowship, so that the 5 points of fellowship are equal to the 3 points of my obligation or entry in the 4 cardinal virtues? Now, brother, as you have squared off your building, you lay the foundation. What are the tools necessary to carry on your work? First, compass and rule. Compasses and rule to lay off my design upon the trestle board. Then truth to level the foundation. Next, justice plumbs the upright, and charity squares the covering. What cement is used? Love and friendship cements, and unity gives the bond. How do you ornament it? With regularity, virtue, and concord. What do you furnish it with? The 4 cardinal virtues. What are they? Justice, prudence, temperance, and fortitude. And how do you place them? Justice in the east, prudence in the west, temperance in the south, and fortitude in the north. What do you dedicate it with? Corn, wine, and oil. And why do you dedicate it with corn, wine, and oil? Because corn, wine, and oil were the merchandises which Solomon, king of Israel, sent Hiram, king of Tyre, in return for the cedar and cypress wood he received from him to build the temple. To whom would you dedicate your lodge? To God and the holy apostle, St. John. And why do you dedicate it to God? Because all places where God is worshipped are dedicated to him, and to him all upright and good men are dedicated. Why do you dedicate it to the holy apostle, St. John? Because St. John taught and preached brotherly love as the capstone of religion. For love is the fulfilling of the law. Now, brother, your lodge thus built, cemented, ornamented, furnished, and dedicated, how is the door secured? Silence locks the door and deposits the key. Where is the key deposited? In every true, just, and honest Mason's heart. Now, brother, after it has thus been finished and locked up, how does it stand? As every honest Mason stands upright on the square, fronting the four cardinal points of heaven with extended arms, ready to receive and comfort the worthy and deserving from all the four points, when silence shut the door of your lodge, what charge did she give you? She required me to do justly, love mercy, to walk humbly with my God, and to remember my three duties, that I might be a welcome guest whenever I returned. When you return, how do you expect to be readmitted? By three principal steps or graces. And what are they? First, faith, which is an asset of the mind to all things delivered in the Holy Scriptures as the testimony of Almighty God. And secondly, hope, which is the anchor of the soul, sure and steadfast, by which we look for salvation through the promises and goodness of God. And thirdly, charity, which is the love of God and unlimited benevolence to all mankind, by the true observance of which we shall be enabled to ascend the heavenly grand lodge, where there is fulfillment of joy and pleasure to flow forevermore, which God grant may be our happy lot. Amen. Del Evans, like someone to love. let me say thank you for joining us today and goodbye for now. We'll be in touch soon. Look forward to being in a world where committing random acts of Masonic kindness is a daily event. Well, I know it is. It is because you're in it and you're up to that type of thing. The secrets, they're tucked away with that key. The key that secures the door of masonry is silence, as Wilmshurst would lead us to believe. I think it may be onto something. Again, we're going to end our show with a homage to Aretha Franklin. She's no longer with us. If only, eh? Beautiful.
Bye. Bye.